Good afternoon. I'll call the 1,360th meeting of the Board of Directors to order. Our first item of business is public comment, and the first speaker is Judy Wolf. Ms. Judy Wolf. Welcome, Ms. Wolf, and you have 2 minutes to speak.
Thank you. My topic is track worker safety. Good afternoon, Chairwoman Hudgens and members of the WMATA Board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Judy Wolf, and I represent the Track Worker Family Fund of Rochester, New York. I'm an engineer by profession with a background in industry safety issues. I enjoy a varied group of supporters from among members of Congress, track worker unions, families and friends of fallen workers, safety industries, and others associated with the rail. The mission of TWFF has been favorably received at local, state, and federal levels, and I welcome all interested parties to join us. I have provided copies of the TWFF mission statement for each of you. On the last page of this booklet, you will find a copy of the NTSB's unanimous recommendation to implement secondary warning technology, number SB0805, issued in January 2008. I have also provided 3 pertinent articles for you. One relates to WMATA's launching of various other NTSB initiatives. Unfortunately, SB 0805 is not on that list. It should be added. I am glad to note the improvements in track worker safety that have been achieved since James Daugherty and Richard Sarles were appointed. These are certainly heartening and positive steps in the right direction. But had NTSB recommendation number SB 0805 been applied aggressively immediately following its release, there would be 4 fewer railway workers named on the memorial pylon at Metro Center. Metro Board members, you've been entrusted with the lives of your workers. Please apply the existing technology and training at your disposal to protect these lives. I am making a direct appeal to you to provide the railway workers with the tools they need to ensure their safety as they work. These tools are in use in New York, Philadelphia, L.A., the Maryland portion of WMATA, Charlotte, Cleveland, Portland, San Jose. Why not the nation's capital? As I continue to work with congressional members, I hope I count on your support. I welcome feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. The next speaker is Marcel Banks. Marcel Banks. Welcome, Ms. Banks. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Okay, my name is Marcel Banks, and the reason why I am here today, on January the 5th, I fell on the train at Rhode Island Avenue Station. I got up. When the train stopped, I got up to get off, and the train pulled off again and threw me middle way of the floor. I hurt my leg. And I fell on top of some other people who were sitting down, you know, in the seat. They asked me, was I hurt? And I told them, yeah, I hurt my leg. My leg stuck against a box or something on the train. And I didn't know I had broke my glasses. So when they got me up, the gentleman handed me my pocketbook, and I went down to the station manager. She filled out a complaint. Then when I got home and I went to get my glasses to read, I broke both pair of my glasses. So I've been trying to get Metro. I got in touch with Miss Rice down here in the building. And so she was trying to help me. And I kept calling and calling, and she never returned my phone call. So then I've been down here 5 times trying to get my glasses, you know, fixed, get new glasses. So anyway, make a long story short, that's what I'm here for today. I want my glasses fixed. I do not have any glasses. I use a magnifying glass to read. So I appreciate if I can get these glasses fixed. I have 2 pair of glasses. And I really need my glasses. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Banks. And I would ask staff if they would try and get with Ms. Banks and see.
Yeah, we have staff here. They'll
Okay. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Ronald, is it Chestnut? Ronald Chestnut.
Good evening, board. Good evening, board. My name is Ronald Chestnut. I'm here today to see about the mental abscess and found out I had to make an appointment. Prior to that, I was going out the door and someone spoke to me about helping myself with my smart trip card, which was faded. I went to an argument, not me arguing, but somebody disrespecting me with trying to get the help. On the buses, I'm having a problem with my smart trip card, and it would be an honor if the drivers of these buses could have a meeting according to growing themselves to learning how to handle the bus service when a handicapped person gets on that bus to stop throwing them through the bus when they take off. Which I had two injuries on that bus from a prior old injury where I was damaged more now, getting ready for an operation for the hip because I was slammed through the bus.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chestnut, for your testimony. And did you say, excuse me, Mr. Chestnut, did you say you have a smart trip card that has a problem? And you also have a complaint. Okay. Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much. Before the bus pulls off. Thank you. We're going to ask staff to look at your complaint. Thank you for coming. The next testimony is from Anna. Is that correct? Anna Collins?
Good afternoon. My name is Anita Collins. I'm the Assistant Director of Social Services with Unity Healthcare. We provide primary, specialty, and social services to the underserved in the District of Columbia. We have approximately 32 sites all over the city providing care. We were recently informed that the tokens were going to stop being sold in by Metro, and we wanted to know that if we would be able to, or social services agencies in general, would be able to purchase tokens after February 28th. Tokens are paramount to assisting our patients with their access to care and social services all over the city, and we're really concerned if social services agencies will not be able to provide the service to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Collins. Ms. Carroll, I think we know this issue is of a change, and if you could address that.
Yeah, we will address it. We did much communication specifically targeted to the social service entities because of the issue that she just described, but we will follow up and make sure that we are assisting them as much as possible.
Thank you. The last speakers are Renetta Anderson and Amy Myers.
Okay, good afternoon to all Metro board members and community that's here. If everyone had a chance to read their handouts, you will not only see how much of a burden financially these fare increases would be, but it is also could be a medical burden because due to a lot of the social service cuts that have been happening, due to the cuts that the state governments have been doing, people cannot afford a lot of the assistance, and they would need Metro access to get them to these dialysis appointments, not to mention a hospital or et cetera. But it is certainly a medical burden. We have actually heard from some people that have been on dialysis that if these prices go up any higher, they will not be able to afford Metro access. We've also heard from many of them that they would start wheeling the wheelchairs down the streets. We warned about this a few months ago from something that we knew about in New Jersey, and we're hearing it already. So if you can find a way not to raise these fares, it would be a good idea. I know the federal government came through with some funding, so you wouldn't have to. My question is, what happened to that funding? Because we know.
Ms. Myers and Ms. Anderson, is that your testimony? Well, thank you very much for your issue that you've raised. And I think we'll have Mr. Kent speak with you about it, because I think we have tried to address the issue. And this is about the natural access fare going to the flat $7 and the question of whether or not it will be $7 for you. Okay. Thank you very much for coming. Is there any questions from the board? Okay. And I now call for the approval of today's agenda. Are there any questions? Madam Chair? There's a motion for approval, and is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Downs. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Thank you. As we begin the meeting, I want to acknowledge that Mr. Searles is not here today, and Mr. Searles is away with his family. His mother passed this week, and I think on behalf of the board, we'd like to publicly extend our condolences to his family, and we have, as acting today, Mr. Shiva Pant in his behalf. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the January 27th meeting. Minutes are before you. Is there a motion for approval? Moved by Ms. Hewlett. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Downey. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? Thank you. The next item is the report of the Writers Advisory Council, and with us today is Ms. Penny Eveline.
Good afternoon, Chair Hutchins, members of the WMATA Board. My name is Penny Eveline, and it is my pleasure to present the Writers Advisory Council report on behalf of our Chair, Frank DiBernardo, who couldn't be here due to a work commitment. In February, we had a meeting with the Chief Financial Officer, Carol Kissel, and she provided the Council with an overview of Metro's proposed fiscal year 2012 budget. The Council is pleased that at present, the General Manager's proposed budget does not call for any increases in fares or cuts in service. We do note that the proposed budget calls for increases in jurisdictional contributions to close Metro's budget gap and have asked jurisdictions to fully fund their share of Metro's budget in order to avert service cuts. Should the Board propose any changes in service, as part of its deliberations of the fiscal year 2012 budget, the Council asked the Board to ensure that a robust public input process be included, and we provided some guidance on what that would entail. We were also invited to give several presentations on our WMATA governance report, which we did with the National Capital Region Transportation Planning Board, as well as the League of Women Voters in February. We had several committee meetings and have been working very closely with staff on Metro bus issues, fare media changes, and also elevator and escalators. And we welcomed two new members to our council as well, so we have a full Riders Advisory Council, I'm pleased to report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Aberline, for your report. The next item is a report by the chair, and I'm going to take a few moments to share some comments with you as I began this first meeting as chair of the Metro Board. I'm struck by the fact that public transportation has been an integral part of my getting around most of my life. Growing up in a small town of Arkansas, public transportation carried my mother to and from work, gave my siblings, friends, and me the opportunity to venture from home, to shop, and to park, to travel to a park across town. And for 4 years, the bus was my transportation to the campus across town where I completed my education. I landed here upon graduation in Washington, D.C. as the first job at a public school teacher. And yes, indeed, I found myself taking the bus to work. I think I can say, while not a transit professional, I'm not unfamiliar with the mission of public transportation. And having lived and worked in this region for more than four decades, I've seen the birth and the completion of the 106-mile system, and expect to see the completion of the 25% expansion of the Metro as it passes just miles within our backyard. It seems as though it was just a few years ago that the Metro system that I came to know was the system with the new shiny clean trains where I could always find a seat. That is not the Metro of today. While the ride into Metro meetings or a trip to the Verizon Center or a visit in Maryland is still one to marvel as the best transportation alternative, as the face of Metro has changed. And acknowledging that Metro has changed, I believe we have turned the corner by hiring our new general manager, Richard Serres. His focus on rebuilding the infrastructure while instilling in the organization a culture of safety and strong customer service reflects the requirement needed for the leading this new Metro in this new Metro environment and centered on the operation of our system. Mr. Serres will be supported in these efforts by a partnership with the board that sets performance goals and measurements that will hold him accountable. Now the question is, can the board of directors bring the same commitment to the changed face of Metro that was seen through the early decades in building our system? I'm confident that my board members are prepared to do just that. Establishing the Standing Governance Committee, where policymaking and goal setting can be given the necessary attention, is a first step. The board will set its performance goals and measurements to assure that we are clearly working to improve safety, can rebuild our infrastructure, enhance service, and improve communication. Neither the CEO nor the board can be successful without supporting our workforce, establishing meaningful input channels with our customers, and building stronger relationships with our external stakeholders. Strong partnerships are important, as is a keen focus on governance, but demonstrated transparency and accountability must be met with the understanding that adequate funding for Metro is as essential in a changed Metro as it was in funding the construction of the 106-mile system. The ability to serve 1.3 million bus, rail, and paratransit riders each day cannot go unnoticed and is a major contribution to the economy and the quality of life of all of the citizens of the region. And lastly, the Dulles Extension will be operational in 3 years, with the final portion bringing on additional service in 5 or 6 years. Our region is projected to grow by over 200 million jobs, and it's not too soon to begin planning to address the transit needs of our growing region. The lessons learned from not planning for the changes that occurred as our new system age can serve as an opportunity for a policy-focused board to be leaders in the discussion of how to plan for the transit needs to meet the future growth of the region. I see challenges ahead, but challenges also represent opportunities, and I look forward to the opportunity to work with the Metro Board and the CEO to improve safety and provide better service in rebuilding our infrastructure. I look forward to us continuing on this approach. I would now take the time to call upon the General Manager for the report from Mr. Pott at this time.
Good afternoon, Chair Hodgins and board members. As you noted, Mr. Serres is unable to be here today due to passing away of his mother. Our thoughts are with him during this difficult time for his family. And in his absence, I'm just going to provide a brief report, starting out with the track work projects last weekend. I wanted to thank our employees who worked through the President's Day holiday weekend on a major track project that was part of the larger overhaul we are doing focused on rebuilding the rail system. This past weekend's work on the blue and orange line was a step forward in safety improvements to the rail system, as well as repairing tunnel leaks, which can cause service disruptions if not returned to a state of good repair. We also repaired aging escalators at both the Smithsonian and Federal Triangle Metro Rail stations and made progress on rebuilding a crumbling platform at the Rockville station on the Red Line. Perhaps the most important work accomplished was improving system safety with the replacement of four track switches that make up the interlocking at the Smithsonian station, and this was in compliance with the NTSB recommendation. We certainly appreciate the employees giving up a holiday weekend to serve our customers, and we appreciate the patience of our customers as we work to rebuild the rail system to make it safer and improve service reliability. And as was noted before, this was, you know, this was done in a very safe manner. There were no incidents of any kind. As a reminder, 9 days from now, during the weekend of March 4 to 6, we will be out there doing major rebuilding work again. Significant safety and reliability work is scheduled on the blue, orange, and red lines to comply with NTSB recommendations, and that will cause some temporary service changes for customers, but it will also mean a safer and smoother ride once it's completed. During that weekend, we will continue repairs on the aerial structure outside the Cheverly Metro Rail Station, make train control upgrades outside the Stadium Armory Metro Rail Station, install about 6,000 feet of cellular communication cables to ultimately improve cell phone coverage, replace 2,000 feet of track, 380 insulators, 1,400 rail ties, and 400 track fasteners. As a result of this work, on the Orange Line, there will be no train service between the Stadium Armory and New Carrollton Metro Rail stations and the five stations in between. Also, there will be no Blue Line service between Stadium Armory and Benning Road Metro Rail stations during that time. Shuttle bus services will be provided like we always do, so customers can complete their trips. To alert customers about this work, we will send e-alerts, post signs in key stations, place notices on station kiosks, and we have already placed advertisements in local newspapers, and we'll be making train and system announcements. And, of course, additional information will be on our website. Crime tips, as we discussed earlier this morning during the Safety and Security Committee meeting, robberies are up overwhelmingly due to the theft of personal electronic devices. The types of robberies that our transit police are currently seeing involve a thief targeting a rider who is sitting or standing near the doors with a phone or music player in hand. After the train doors open, the thief grabs the device from the victim's hand and runs out just as the train doors are about to close. Chief Taborn talks about these as being crimes of opportunity, and there are several steps people can take to help reduce their chances of becoming a target for thieves. Customers are less likely to be victims of these snatch-and-grab crimes if they pay attention to their surroundings and keep their phones, iPads, and music players concealed when they are not in use. We also recommend that our customers carry electronic devices in a pocket or a place where it is not easily seen or easy to reach. Keep the volume of their music player at a low to moderate level so they can hear what's going on around them. When using an electronic device, riders should avoid sitting or standing near doors of rail cars or buses. And we also encourage our riders to report any suspicious activity to a Metro employee or call the Metro Transit Police. Finally, for our recognition of an employee, I would like to ask Jack Requa to come forward to introduce this month's employee who is being recognized.
Thank you, Shiva. Mr. Monk, could I ask you to stand? Thank you. On December 9th, the male passenger who boarded a Metro bus at the King Street station told operator Eugene Monk that he had a 9mm gun and a bomb, which he intended to use. The man repeated the statement and began tapping his pocket to indicate where the weapon and apparent explosives were hidden, at which time Mr. Monk noticed a wire sticking out of the man's pocket. Mr. Monk believed that the customer's demeanor was serious and that he had every reason to believe that the threat was real. Operator Monk reacted in the best interest of the safety of his passengers by evacuating the bus in a way that maintained order and did not scare or alarm anyone on board. Mr. Monk pretended to have a mechanical problem with the bus and asked the passengers to exit and to wait to catch another bus. While the passengers were exiting the bus, he alerted the Metro Transit police. When the police arrived, they questioned the man, and upon searching him, fortunately, did not find a weapon or a bomb. However, the police did determine that the man may have been suffering from a mental illness and took him into protective custody, then transported him to a local hospital in Alexandria, where he was evaluated and subsequently admitted. In spite of what was believed to have been an immediate dangerous situation, our bus operator's quick thinking was performed professionally and unselfishly. Although weapons were not found, this incident shows that the security of Metro's customers and employees are always at the forefront of the actions of conscientious employees such as Mr. Monk. Mr. Monk, we thank you for your dedication and professionalism, and I'd like to invite you to please join me in the center of the room along with Chief of Staff Sheila Pont, Board Chair Catherine Hudgens, and Metro Police Chief Michael Hayborn for a presentation and a photograph.
Concludes my remarks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pond, and again, Mr. Monk, thank you for your bravery and your service to WMATA. The next item is a report from the Finance and Administration, Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. Members of the board, you have before you a request to increase the number of staff positions by 12. This is to carry out project management and quality assurance functions for the Dulles Metrorail project, and this is for our staff to work with the Airports Authority staff to assure that the product that is created is one that we truly want to operate. I move this item. It's also fully reimbursable. I move this item.
The item's been moved, and is there a second? Second by Ms. Hines. Is there a discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion? And opposed? Hearing none, that's approved. The next report is from the report of customer service and operations from Mr. Downs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee met on the 10th of February and recommended approval of the changes to the Accessibility Advisory Committee governance, in effect, moving the reporting relationship from the general manager CEO directly to the board. On behalf of the committee, I move approval of the resolution.
We have a motion on the table. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Acosta. Any discussion? Here, none. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing that, then the item is approved. The next is the report of the Policy and Program Development Intergovernmental Relations Committee. Mr. Acosta.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee met on February 10th. There are two matters before you today. The first matter is a bicycle and pedestrian access improvement studies and goals. Staff at that meeting sought board endorsement of the Metro Rail Bicycle and Pedestrian Access Improvement Study and adoption of a Metro Rail Bicycle Access Mode Share Goal.
After discussions at the meeting, the committee felt there could be some improvements in terms of reinforcing pedestrian access and even developing a pedestrian goal that would complement the bicycle goal that staff had prepared. So before you is a amended or a revised resolution which notes a number of changes dealing with pedestrian access. The one issue that was not resolved or not in this document are quantifiable goals with respect to pedestrian load share to our Metro Rail station. I had been informed by staff that there still has to be significant work done in order to determine that number because it is a significant number of people arrive at our stations by that are pedestrians, and there will be also corresponding impacts on our on auto and bus arrivals in terms of modes. But so they wanted to re-examine all of those relationships before bringing back to the committee and then to the board. So on behalf of the committee, I'd like to move approval of this resolution with the understanding that the staff will come back at a later date with pedestrian goals.
Thank you. The motion is on the table. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Benjamin. Is there any discussion? Yes, Mr. Downey.
At the Safety Security Committee this morning, we heard about the considerable increase in bicycle thefts at our stations, and I would hope that the plan would deal with better security for bicycles.
Yes.
We're going to encourage people to use them.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
And those opposed? Thank you. Mr. Costa?
The second item is the exemption from privacy policy for OIG investigative data hotline records. Staff sought board approval to exempt the Office of the Inspector General Investigation and hotline records from certain provisions of the privacy policy. The revised policy supports Metro's goal to deliver quality service. I move approval of this resolution.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Mr. Downey moves a second. Is there any discussion? Any questions? You seeing none, all those in favor of the item?
Aye.
And those opposed? The item is approved. And the next item is a report of the Joint Development and Real Estate Committee, and this is an item from executive session. Mr. Wells, do you have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The matter to be taken up by the board was considered in our executive session per our policies regarding negotiations on matters involving real estate, Prince George's Plaza parking agreement. All board members, I believe, have reviewed it and, of course, has discussed it. And so I move that we adopt the recommendation of our staff.
The item's been moved in, by Mr. Wells and second by Ms. Hewlett. Any discussion of the item? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Thank you very much. The motion passes. Report of the Governance Committee, and Ms. Hines, that is yours.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Our Governance Committee met on February 17th, and what you have before you is our work plan, and I would move that we adopt this work plan to guide our work over the next few months.
There is a motion on the table to adopt the work plan. Is there a second from Ms. Hines' motion? Second by Ms. Hewlett. Is there a discussion? I think this is worthy of discussion, and I want to thank Ms. Hines for moving us this quickly to this item, and we look forward to the progress of this work plan and the work of the Governance Committee. All those in favor of the motion before us?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing no opposition, the motion has passed. And before us is a consent agenda. Are there any concerns about the items that are on the consent agenda at this time? Mr. Downs?
I understand that the items are on the consent calendar about international travel as a result of a resolution of the Board of Directors that the Board specifically approve all international travel. There was a suggestion that this is potentially in conflict with the third item on the consent calendar and would make the point that I think it is inappropriate for the board to be making decisions on behalf of the general manager, that the board's role should be to set specific performance criteria and values as part of making those decisions, and then trust the general manager's judgment about that, and hope that this sense of the third consent item is to include the specific authority for the specific issue of international travel.
Thank you. Mr. Downey?
I certainly would support that. I had a question on the first item with respect to the track geometry vehicle, and want to be sure that the construction of that vehicle in Austria, I guess it is consistent with Buy America procedures.
Yes, it is.
It is. Thank you. And on the second one, I just wanted to note with some pride that our safety people are being asked to go to Hong Kong and help them evaluate their safety.
Okay, Ms. Hines.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. On item number three, which is, I think, in keeping with all of our governance work and moving things along, I did want to raise just one issue, and again, I plead newness and wanting to understand a little bit more. There's no mention in here of process relative to changes in the personnel manual or the procedures that may apply to these non-represented folks, and I come from a tradition where at least you have a conversation before you go in and wholesale make changes to people's working conditions and other things. So I'm hoping that we have such procedures in place, but would like some assurance from management that we do.
I think this action itself is not changing any policy. It is simply taking certain policies that were initially not delegated to the CEO. They are now delegated to the CEO. I think as far as the process goes, if in the future there are changes to any of these, we do have an internal process by which all the policies are changed, or so it's not like it's just an administrative act and the policy gets changed. There's a whole procedure, and then the draft changes are circulated to the executive leadership team for review and comment. So it does have a process by which the policy instruction manual is changed. I don't know if that answers your question.
Could I ask a follow-up, Ms. Hudgens?
Yes.
So, Mr. Pant, the folks to whom these changes would apply, the 1,200 or 1,300 people, they have an opportunity to see the proposed change before the manager makes that change, or no?
These are all of these policies. Would not the process that we have internally now with the policies, personnel policies that are delegated to the CEO, are what Mr. Pond described, that the ELT, the executive leadership team, would actually evaluate that. And in their course of evaluation, they would actually seek from their managers and supervisors, you know, review and advice and counsel as a part of that review. So it would not be a wholesale, here's the recommended draft policy, please have 1,500 people review it, but it would actually have an order about it. And then based upon that result, the CEO would make a decision, and then it would be communicated out. If obviously it would affect labor, actually these don't affect labor because the collective bargaining agreement would affect labor. I will say and add to Mr. Pond's remarks that if they do have a financial impact that goes above and beyond what the board has already approved within a current year budget, obviously the CEO would come back to the board and inform the board of that impact in action prior to proceeding.
May I ask one additional question?
You still have it.
So if it goes over budget, the general manager CEO comes back to the board and says, I want to make this change. And I need your approval to do it because it's going over budget.
Right. The financial constraint would trigger that information to the board, not necessarily the policy.
If it's, suppose it's a change to people's contribution to retirement, where the employee will now contribute more so the agency pays less, mm-hmm. does that kind of a shift have to also is the board made aware of that sort of a shift?
I would say that because that would be a very large change that would affect our employees, that the CEO, on behalf, I'm talking, he's not here, but he would want to bring that to the board to advise them of that very critical change. So
I guess where I'm going with this is this is one of those places where the line is sometimes not clear, and because we don't see the particulars, I mean, is the resolution refers to certain enumerated provisions, we can't be sure where the new line is as board. And whether or not, as we talked about relative to bag searches, there are principles that the board might enumerate at some other point relative to that. So I know not 90% of our folks are under collective bargaining arrangements or other kinds of contracts. I worry about the one small group that's not, that they feel that they are treated equally. And I know Mr. Sarles worries about that too. But it is this issue of where's the line? And how do we, what assurance do we have? So I guess, I don't know whose committee that, where that flag goes, but I would like to at some point have a more fulsome conversation about that particular line.
Okay. We do not have a motion on the floor, and at this time I'd ask if we would like a motion to approve the consent items and on block. Is there a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. And I want to make one comment regarding Mr. Downs, because I think in addressing this, noted, I call it the upside-down approach that we seem to be doing this, but the two items that we are approving are by resolution that is part of the board, and so that is why it's before us. So we will take up a discussion at another time as to whether or not it would be items of this that could be removed at a future time. All those in favor of the items, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All those, the motion is passed. The next is a set of other action items, and let me go through them, I think, individually, because I think they also may have. The approval of to enter into the master agreement with the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation. Question, Mr. Is there a motion? Let me start. Is there a motion on the table?
I just have some questions.
Okay. Thank you. I'll take Mr. Costa's motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Thank you for second, and now discussion, Mr. McKay.
Thank you. I'm a little confused by this item. Is this the first time we've been asked to do this?
No, well, we have had master agreements before, but there are some amendments that the state has sought since last year, so and they have said that we do need to have a revised or a new master agreement that would guide future funds that flow to us.
And the changes are characterized in this as indemnification. Is that the full limitation of the changes to the master agreement that are before us?
It's not the full list of the changes, but it's one that specifically requires us to notify the board. There are other really administrative or procedural changes to this grant. It's really, you know, funds that come to WMATA from DRPT flow through to us as a grant. If it's not included in, for example, the PREA, which is not precisely a grant. But this flow of money has always been treated by the state as a grant, and they attach master terms and conditions, very similar to the way the federal government also requires us to enter into a master agreement. Now, we've entered into many of these agreements through the years. They have come to the board, and there are always variations. The main thing we usually try to do is make sure that we don't have conflicting obligations with the federal government, or that nothing in the agreement runs afoul of our compact requirements. This particular grant master agreement did require an indemnification, and so that's why it's called out specially to the board.
And what are the circumstances that we're aware of that prompts that? Is there a history? Is there a particular concern that's been raised? Why now does this particular item need to be addressed?
You know, you're asking me from Virginia's perspective.
Yeah, well,
I think what they have done, and this is the same master agreement that applies to all of its all of the entities that throughout the state that it gives money to. So they are asking us to adhere to the same master terms and conditions. I don't know what prompted the indemnity to be included in this version. It was not in the prior versions, but I don't think it's much of a risk, really, if we were sued in connection with any of the activities that were funded from the state. I'm sure it would largely be a direct suit against WMATA. It would be pretty remote, I think, for a plaintiff to try to go against the grantor agency in this instance.
And you mentioned there were some other administrative items. What can you give me an example of what staff would construe an administrative item?
Well, probably the one that's caused us the most concern has been the requirements, and I'm sorry, I don't have, actually I might have a master agreement, requirements to give them asset management data. The state has electronic, I think they call it OLGA, and they require their grantees to track all the assets in this system, which is, that has taken a lot of conversation between us and the state representatives because we don't keep our asset management data in the same way. So that's, we believe we've resolved the way we're going to provide it to them. And won't be, you know, as you know, we have a very large asset base. But that comes to mind as the one that's caused us the most negotiation, if you will. Sorry, I didn't. We've been negotiating this for quite some time. So the two issues that remain in my mind that it took the longest to resolve were the indemnity and the asset management.
Well, what is the time frame on this? Why is there a reason why we would have to act on this today that you're aware of? Is there a financial implication? Is there a some implication we need to be aware of as to why action would be necessary today?
I think there are several projects which in the budget we have assumed that there would be state funds, and more importantly, the, you know, I think it's mentioned in the item, the Cinderbed project and the West Falls Church canopy, and there are other projects that are funded through state funds that we have assumed as part of the normal process. Since the state is now treating these as grants, they fall under the purview of this agreement. So those are the projects that are affected, and that's why this has been in the works, as some of you may remember, since last year. And we finally, like Ms. O'Keefe said, we were, the state was insisting that we provide asset management and other data in the format that they were prescribing, and we do not keep our data in that format. And they have finally agreed that we would simply provide them some spreadsheets of asset data the way we keep it. And so they have finally accepted that, and that's what it took the longest to negotiate.
Well, I'm uncomfortable. I mean, I'm not a voting member, so I can't, you know, make a motion or act on this, but I would be uncomfortable voting on this today without seeing it. I think there's a lot at stake here. The administrative item that just was discussed is not insignificant. And I think that, you know, we need to be careful as to what we're agreeing to do through this process. And I do think, in light of the importance of these projects, that these are things that probably the board should look at. And I'm not clear in the language. It doesn't mention anywhere in here other administrative items that are changing. I read this and assumed that this was specifically dealing with one issue. And actually, it sounds like it's dealing with multiple issues. If the board does not decide to defer this and to review the master agreement, I would suggest that at a minimum, the language under funding impact that talks about special project agreements and board actions are required for receiving funds for these specific projects themselves that I guess are what are being referred to as the project agreements earlier in the item, the specific project agreements for those, that a minimum, that same language be included in the resolution, because as I read the resolution, one might construe that as we're authorizing the CEO to sign off on the indemnification, but it doesn't specifically state in there that, in fact, individual project agreements on these will still be coming back to the board before funds are received so that we can evaluate those. And so I would think at a minimum we would want that in the resolution, but I certainly would be a lot more comfortable with this item if the board, if the master agreement was circulated to the board for review.
Mr. Soki,
I'm sorry.
As the item stands today, does this affect any other funding at this time that would come to us other than the projects that are here? To what extent would you know that?
No, this is an isolated tranche of money.
So what we're doing today under that master agreement to move forward with those two projects or the projects that are identified, which are prescriptive, pretty much described what the funding must go to, would be a description of the grant as they wish to provide the money and the terms that they wanted to provide it on.
You'd like a rundown of the grant terms and conditions.
Right.
That, I believe, was what Mr. McKay asked for.
And then with subsequent projects, would we have before us a similar approval?
Well, we didn't actually think of coming back with the specific projects because they've, in effect, already been approved by the board as part of its CIP. So I think it's a good point that Mr. McKay made, that the resolution should probably authorize us entering into specific project agreements. So we could come back with project agreements, but that was not what staff was intending to do because, again, it's already been through the CIP process for the board.
Okay. Let me go back to
sure, I'm not sure I understand that because the verbiage says separate project agreements and board actions are required for receiving funds. Does the board not have to act to receive funds under this program? I mean, I understand we're not acting on the projects themselves, but the way I read that is we're acting to accept funds to pay for a project that's in our CIP.
That's correct.
So, in fact, it would have to come back to the board before we would accept the funding, even if it's in our CIP, because of the nature of the source of funding.
Well, some of the actions, for example, let's take Center Bay Road, that project has already been through the board in terms of the regular approval process, except for the approval of the construction agreements, which I believe we would be bringing back to the board. But the project agreements themselves are relatively small, and they're a couple pages that simply describe what WMOD is going to spend the money on. The master terms and conditions, again, it's a fairly thick document that sets forth all the grant terms and conditions. Again, it's very similar to our FPA master grant, which we renew each year. So I don't think I'm answering your question.
Well, my concern is not with these individual projects. These are approved projects. My concern is what other terms are we agreeing to by accepting money from DRPT to pay for these projects?
Oh.
And that's really my question. The dispute here, the question is not the projects themselves, but what terms and agreements are we agreeing to in accepting the money for these projects? That is what is of concern to me.
I understood you wanted to see the full agreement.
No, what I want to see is what's new in it that we are accepting that we didn't already have in a master agreement, and then specifically on these individual projects, are we agreeing to any new terms as a result of accepting funding from DRPT to pay for these projects?
You haven't seen the project agreements yet.
And that's why I was asking the question about coming back to the board before accepting those funds. That is a policy decision of the board, is you can accept these funds,
right,
but in accepting them, it may in fact be the case that we are agreeing to other terms and conditions, which I think we want to see before we accept the funding.
Mr. Downey and then Mr. Bender.
question on the funds. These are state funds that they're using to make discretionary grants. They could give it to Richmond. They could give it to us. They decided these projects. And the terms and conditions, you're saying, are no different here than would be the case elsewhere?
Elsewhere throughout the Commonwealth, yes.
Yeah. And we accept lots of federal funds, which also have their unique terms and conditions. How is that handled? Is that a standing agreement that's been made with the federal government?
It's renewed each year, but it's not a matter of negotiation.
Yeah.
We accept, we have to sign up every year and provide certifications and
certification
insurances.
Annually, yeah.
Right, and the terms are set for all federal grantees. Mm-hmm. There are slight changes from year to year, sometimes really very few changes, but the difference with the master agreement we're talking about now is it is a matter of negotiation, and sometimes it's a very difficult negotiation because, as you cannot have two masters, it's hard to have two grantor agencies. So it's a fair amount of work that staff goes to try to reconcile our obligations to the federal government, our obligations as a compact entity, with what the Commonwealth is asking us to subscribe to. So I understand Mr. McKay's desire to see the entire document and have an understanding. And we can do a comparison to the last signed master agreement. There have been a lot of changes as this process is going on. So the fair comparison would be to the last master agreement, which has been some years ago that it was approved and signed.
Mr. Benjamin. Mr. McKay and Mr. Downey have raised an issue that has gotten me confused. Are these grant funds for reimbursable projects or for the non-federal share of CIP contributions?
The latter.
Yes. Okay. Now, one of the principles that exists in our compact is that we should not be having different sets of terms and conditions from each jurisdiction. For instance, Maryland normally would give a grant, but I believe we don't do that, even though the money flows and is officially titled a grant at some point. And the whole concept here is that if Maryland had its terms and conditions, and the district had its terms and conditions, and Virginia had its terms and conditions, and the federal government had its terms and conditions, the problem that you're just raising could make this place unworkable. So the question becomes, do we stick on a policy basis with the broad principles that are set forth in our compact, which says these aren't things that we accept on that basis, that there's a single way that we do business, or do we have different sets of terms and conditions from each jurisdiction?
Could I just say one thing about that? What Mr. Benjamin has expressed is certainly been expressed by staff over the long period of time that we've been dealing with this funding flow. The big difference is that the money comes from the state through DRPT, and of course the state is not one of our subsidy jurisdictions, the Commonwealth of Virginia. So there is a bit of difference between this particular flow of money, which is very helpful to us, but it's much smaller than other flows. So I think I would agree that it is a big policy issue, and the board certainly would benefit from looking at the whole master agreement. I'm just offering that as a slight difference in terms of the funding streams that we receive from our subsidy.
I guess my concern is this rises to truly a policy issue that the board should be paying attention to, which is not the details of this agreement, but the broader policy as to on what basis do we accept money, which is what Mr. McKay originally raised as the issue.
Okay. Mrs. O'Keefe, in moving this item, we would be moving any other long-term parts of that agreement for other capital projects? Is that?
It would apply to all, not, it would not apply to our capital funding agreement.
No, not that one.
You know, this is a very
any subsequent jurisdictional funds that would come from Virginia,
yes.
That would come from Virginia today in their grant process rather than the other. And I guess I would ask also, do we jurisdictionally have others that have these agreements for the grants that comes from DRPT?
Oh, from DRPT?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. The only comparable grant circumstances I can recall is there was a small amount of grant money that came from the state of Maryland for some work at College Park, I believe. But we didn't specifically have an extensive grant terms and conditions, but Maryland did designate those funds as grants. I think it was about $3 million.
Okay, there are there's one other question I'd like to ask, and that is about the projects that are listed and timing for those projects. What about a deferral at this time, and what is the impact on those projects?
One thing is if we're moved to the point where we can close on the Cinderbed Road project, and we're not there yet, and we would be, I know, intending to at least do a memo and rundown for the board on where we are with that. But these funds were targeted at least for that, so I know that would other arrangements would have to be made, or we simply have to wait till we get the next month to bring back the grant terms and conditions to you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to be clear on that. What is the date by which we have to close on the property per the contract for Cinderbed Road?
Per the contract, it was February 28th, but because we have other approval processes that haven't been completed, one jurisdictional and one receiving FDA approval, we're going to have to extend that, and we're in conversations with the property owner to do so.
Because the jurisdictional action is not scheduled until, the first Tuesday in March. I'm not sure what that date is off the top of my head, but it doesn't get approved until March. So I would assume that you would be trying to extend this through the month of March, which would allow the board to meet again after seeing more detailed analysis.
That's correct. I believe we're trying to negotiate an agreement that takes us into April, just to be sure we have all the approvals that we need.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. There is a motion on the table. I am going to ask, is there a substitute? Motion is to approve. All those in favor? Those opposed? Nobody wanted a substitute. Okay, how about a substitute to defer? The purpose for a substitute was asked for the deferral, there's silence there. So would you like to withdraw your motion?
Ms. Hewlett, would you please turn your mic on? Thank you.
Thank you. To move approval en masse minus.
We did not. It was only a single. It was a single item. We did not pull the entire piece.
Okay. Yes. So to.
There's a second to defer. Okay. All those in favor to defer. Okay. Opposed. Okay. So now the primary motion is the deferral. All those in favor of deferring the
funding? To a time
certain? I guess we probably need to make it a time certain. Thank you, Mr. Dowling. Till the next board meeting.
Right. Madam Chair.
Yes.
And also, I think it would be helpful to ensure that the language that's put in the resolution that we discussed earlier that council agreed should be there, be in it when it comes back to us, talking about this isn't agreeing to project agreements, but rather only the master agreement.
And
I think that's an important piece.
I think the language, but I think we are going to ask for much more explicit piece of the agreement,
right,
so that we can see that part.
I'm going to do a comparison against the last, master agreement that we signed with BDRPT, but I would, given the delay, we will have to come back with approval for a project agreement for Cinderford Road as well. Yes.
Madam Chair, I'm just specifying that the agreement on the master agreement be explicit that separate project agreements have to be made by the board, and if it happens to be one of those project agreements comes on the same day, that's fine, but I don't want us, it appearing that we're giving a latitude to go ahead and approve all those other projects, terms, and agreements.
That's the understanding that we were in. Okay. So there now is the motion with the changes suggested, and Ms. O'Keefe is going to bring back the additional information. All those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? Okay. Item 1 is deferred under other actions. Are there questions on 2 and 3? And if not, can we move on block? Do you have a question? Okay. Item number 2. Those in, is there a motion on the floor for the Glenmont parking project? Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed. Okay, number 3 is your question. Yes.
I must admit I'm quite confused when I look at the materials that are in front of us as to what, in fact, we are approving. Clearly, we're approving a public hearing. But what the public hearing is on, what alternatives, particularly at Dulles Airport, were not clear to me, whether it was one or multiple or what. And I might as well voice my own bias, which I have voiced here before, and that is we are going to be operating a system for 100 years or more that goes out to Dulles Airport, and we certainly would like to have the most convenient station location relative to people who enter that terminal. I don't know whether any of these options, with the exception of the tunneling option, which presumably is going to be rejected, is very convenient to the airport terminal, and what it is that we're saying is going to be offered to the public for comment. Can anybody tell me that?
Yeah, I can just give you a brief update. I think what you have in your resolution and the attachment that's behind it are the options that last fall the Airport Authority considered and asked for an environmental assessment be prepared. And the reason for the environmental assessment was these are all changes from the alignment that was previously approved. The environmental assessment has been prepared, and it has been sent to the Federal Transit Administration for their comment. It has not yet been officially released. I think the purpose of this item was more to try to keep the public hearing scheduled. The Airport Authority would like to have a public hearing. This would be a joint public hearing, by the way. This would be a Airport Authority Metro joint public hearing, and the schedule calls for this hearing to be sometime in April. What we were trying to do with this item is to simply get authorization for the general manager. Of course, when we do get the material, we would certainly provide it to the board before the hearing is scheduled, but we didn't want to wait till the meeting in March to come back and authorize, because then you have another schedule issue with another 30 days, and so the hearing may not have been in May. So that's the purpose of this item, is to simply keep the process moving. It is not to not have the board involved in looking at what finally gets approved to go to public hearing. That would come back. Okay, so this is for that there will be a public hearing, but what alternatives are included? I know that on page 11 there are 4 alternatives,
right?
Though I don't know for sure what each one really is. I can identify 1 or 2 of them. You're saying that the specific alternatives that will be presented in the public hearing will come back to the board for consideration?
We'll send the
material to the board, the environmental assessment, and what the public hearing docket would look like.
Supposing there's no alternative that matches something that we would like to see there. like, you know, something cheaper than the tunneling, but very convenient to the terminal. Is there any way we can say that's something we'd like to see?
Well, the process-wise, I mean, right now, this is a project that is being handled by the airport authority. They're really the owner right now of the process. We are the ultimate owners of whatever gets built, and then we'll, like you said, be operating it. If this whole exercise, as everybody knows, started because the cost of phase two of this project came significantly higher than what they had assumed. So this is an exercise in looking for options that would reduce the project cost. There is no federal money anticipated in this phase two extension, so the money is primarily coming from tolls and local government bonds and tax districts. So if there is an option that does not meet the requirements as you describe of patrons being able to access the airport easily, and let's say they go with the north garage alignment, which puts the station several hundred feet away, we could certainly, as part of our action, express our position that you know, we would like this to be closer. The issue with this project, unlike other parts of the adopted regional system, is that we are not paying into the capital for this project.
And none of, on the other hand, as we've said before, for the next 100 years, we're going to operate it. We're going to deal with all the customers that are inconvenienced. We are the ones who everybody will look to and say, why in the world did you put the station wherever it is the station is? So there is some reasonable policy basis for saying that perhaps we should at least include an alternative that makes some sense, other than the tunneled one, in the set of alternatives. And so I guess the question I'm asking now is, does the board have any power to do that at any point along this line, or do I have to vote no and say, no, I don't think this is a good idea for even a public hearing if we don't even have any control over the alternatives that are presented?
Well, I think part of our hearing process is also required, because if there is a different change to the general plans, we're having this hearing not just for the environmental purpose. We're holding it because under our procedures, if the plans are going to be different from what the board initially approved, it has to go to public hearing. And any of these changes certainly fits that criteria. So that's why we're having the hearing. The airport authority can still have a hearing on the environmental document, and they can certainly adopt a position, and you know, we could certainly express our opposition or disagreement with that position. This should also remind, and I think the airport authority is aware, that this board did adopt a resolution that it specifically said that we need to be mindful of the customer convenience, and that this board wanted to act on these alignments or make a decision or a recommendation before the airport authority made its decision. And so, I mean, that's a position that has been communicated, and was communicated as late as last week by the general manager when we had a meeting with the airport authority. So
I must admit, I don't understand what role we are playing if we don't seem to have any influence on what goes to public hearing, which is what I think I hear you saying.
Let me recognize Mr. Downs and then Mr. Downey, and then I have a comment myself if there's not.
I think we're arguing over a definitional issue. I think it's clear the authority has said it has concerns about the operating characteristic of the choice. It is often easy in an investment like this to pick the cheapest alternative and have the chips fall later in the process on the operating cost side. That's a temptation here, and I agree with Mr. Benjamin's characterization of this. I think it is important for the board and the authority to speak clearly about its priorities and concern about the long-term operating characteristics, since the assumption here is that no matter what happens in terms of operating cost, one of these terminals is over 600 feet from the current terminal. And it has operating cost obviously embedded in that set of decisions. The assumption is that the authority assumes full responsibility for those operating costs. I think it's important to make clear that at some point, the authority may have the responsibility to decide that it will not assume the operating cost of some of the options that are being put on the table, and that if the Commonwealth or the Airports Authority decide that that is an option for them, they can pay those operating cost differentials themselves as a jurisdictional issue. But I don't believe it is safe or sane to have the authority decide automatically on the front end without a clear set of principles that we could absorb any long-term operating cost configuration about the station complex.
Mr. Downer.
I'm not sure that, in fact, there will be operating costs. There might turn out to be operating savings. However, that doesn't overwhelm my view that we don't want to also do things for our customers that will make this not an attractive ridership option. The cost would be the people who don't ride. As a specific matter, though, since this is a hearing in part on the Airport Authority's environmental assessment, I don't think there is room to bring another alternative at this point. These are what will be on the table. The question will be, are any of them acceptable?
Okay. Any other questions? I think both Mr. Downey and Mr. Downs have raised the concern. We got here in part before the other changes that are proposed regarding the very specific of the location of the stations and the options that were available, and our resolution spoke to that. And now we have that item that we spoke to as well as other changes. And so we're going to a public hearing for two reasons. I have a different question because I think the question goes to the fact that we have an agreement with the Airports Authority, and that is working through what we, RMATA, considers our standards. We are to work through any differences of standards of any implementation that would go forward to see whether or not they don't meet standards, be it imposing additional cost or designs or whatever features. And so what I see this as a public hearing on what the builder of that system is doing and our ability to opine in that public hearing process, and if the options available do not meet standards or what other measurement that we have in the agreement, then that's where we have the option to opine. I don't think we have an option to put out into the public unless we are going to say you must go back, and I don't think we have that right, and do additional options that will allow us to feel comfortable. But the options that are in front of us, to opine on those options, and once we've done so, to see if they meet the standards that we've worked in the master.
And I think just to clarify, just like for phase one and also for phase two, we have an agreement. When you refer to standards, I think that agreement, regardless of which alignment they pick, the standards, they will build it to our standards, and that we have an agreement that will ensure that all WMATA standards are applicable. I think the issue in this one is, you know, where it will be built or what alignment or station location there is. So that's kind of really what the issue here is.
Okay. All right. Is there a motion on the table at this point? A motion on the table. Is there a motion to move approval of the public hearing process proposed for the Dulles to Metro Rail's project? I'm going to put a motion on the table. I'll move approval of the item.
Question on the nature of the hearing. Will this be a board hearing, a staff hearing?
It will be a board and with the Air Force. Yeah, mm-hmm. And staff, yes. And there's a second on the table. All those in favor of the item? I'm voting aye. Opposed?
I abstain.
With that, the item is approved. And, yes.
And I apologize for not knowing the answer to this, but it seems to me that this particular project is one that those of us who are new could stand to have added to our briefing. Mm-hmm. With some of the various components that were talked about here relative to who pays for what in operations and some of those issues sort of laid out for us. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would appreciate is some thinking and some maybe even a timeline or something of what the next steps are along the way so that we have a sense of opportunities for conversation and opportunities to build the boards.
I think that piece of information can be given, and I think, one, we could start with the chronology that was recently circulated, I think, when we brought this item forward to what approvals had taken place, and I guess what we would ask for would be what the additional ones that must take place within timelines.
That would be actually very helpful.
Okay. Our last item is a report from the Washington Suburban Transit Commission.
No report.
And I have no reports from the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission and from federal government. No report.
Madam Chair.
Any items to come before?
Report from D.C.
Oh, why do I do that? I guess that's not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Downs, there is a report, and would you like to make a report, Mr. Wells?
Well,
or is
just,
there?
Just to announce that that the oversight hearing for the committee with oversight in D.C. for WMATA will be holding its performance hearing for the period of 2010 and then this part of 2011. On March 9th at 10 a.m. at the Wilson Building.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Wells. Mr. Downs, do you have anything?
I appreciate being recognized.
That's important. All righty. So there are no more business to come before the board. We are adjourned at this time. Thank you.